A Thought for Your Pennies is hosted by Shauna and Squeaky and explores ways to save money and tips to avoid scams, all while they share their own stories along the way. Get in touch by calling 970-425-3060 or emailing penniespod@gmail.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to A Thought for Your Pennies, the show where we learn how to save money together. I'm Shauna, and this is Squeaky.
Hey, I'm Squeaky, and I have that one easy trick.
Oh, that's great, because we need to hear about those tricks today. We are going to talk about how to save money at work, not really how to save money at work, how to get a raise. And so, Squeaky, I've got five different steps, all thoroughly researched from our great writer, Carl, about how to get a raise. And so I'm going to get into it.
I think this might be the first time I've ever disagreed with Carl, because I got synopsis of the steps.
Yeah. Okay.
So okay. My one quick trick to get a raise is to have irrefutable leverage.
First, okay, so step, like you hire a PI and then you get pictures of them in compromising positions and then
that would
work. I'm going to need a raise or these pictures are going... I mean, what do you mean?
That would work. Okay. step one, get another job offer where you make more money.
Oh.
Then you go to your boss and be like, hey, give me... And let's say you're working for $60,000 a year and the new job is offering $70,000. You say, hey, I've got a job offer for $70,000 a year. Give me more than that or I'm leaving. And then they say no and you hand them your 2 weeks notice and then you go make more money at the new place. Or they say yes and you decide if you want the job. If they know your worth and appreciate you, they'll probably give you a raise. Because if they didn't fire you, it's because you're a valuable employee.
You know, this is actually a very interesting perspective because when you are working at some place, they have already budgeted out how much you're going to get a raise, right? Like it's always going to be like between 2 and 10%.
I've never seen more than 5.
Right? Yeah. And so you're never going to get, whereas if you go work at another place, because you're coming in new, you will jump like $10,000, $20,000.
I have doubled my pay 4 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the advice is, this is why people hop around. There isn't any loyalty at a company anymore. It's like, if you can make 20% more going someplace else, see ya. I don't care about that you've only budgeted 5% for my raise this year. This other company is going to pay me $20,000 more. Peace out.
Yeah.
It's actually really important. Sorry, but it's actually really important for your career development that you don't stay at the same company your entire working life, because you will not make that much money staying at the same company.
One of the times when I doubled my pay was I went to go work for a company. They made software for college bookstores, including the Maverick Bookstore here at UNO in Omaha or in Lincoln here in Nebraska, and Harvard and University of. You know, pick a city. They had about 2,000 customers. So I was making payment processing and cash register systems for them for $60,000 a year back in like 2001 or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a jump from, you know, $15, $20 an hour to $60,000 a year. That's more than double. And I went to my boss and I'm like, hey, I can keep writing on our ticket system, but I have this offer at hand. Instantly, he offered me a $10,000 raise. And I'm like,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
He instantly offered me a $10,000 raise. And I'm like, hey, man, that $10,000 raise. Oh, a quick math trick. If you don't know, if you estimate that you're working 50 weeks a year, you can double your hourly wage, then add 3 zeros. That's how much you make a year. So if you're making $20 an hour, you're making $40,000 a year. Right.
Okay. Right.
Right. So if I was going from 16, that'd be 32 a year, then 60 a year. Okay. And he's like 10,000. I'm like, dude, that's 42. You're still 18 short. And he's like, I don't believe you. I'm like, cool. Here's my 2 week notice. And I handed him the paper and he realized how much he screwed up. I had absolute irrefutable leverage over him. And then he came back like the day before I was going to leave. He's like, look, I can give you 58. I'm like, dude, I don't understand how you don't get numbers, man. Yeah, you're going to give me
60 at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. if you want me to stay, that's what I need. Yeah. yeah.
And that was 16 contracts ago.
Wow. Okay. So that's a great tip from Squeaky. That's probably, I mean, the tip that you could take away. I'm glad we said it early on in the segment about how to get a raise and increase your salary, which is, you know, either go to that other job or apply for other jobs and have that job offer in hand. I hadn't heard the one about having the job offer in hand and going to your boss and being like, hey, do this for me or I'm going to jump. So I mean, that could be one way, because sometimes people, you know, you can't go get a job somewhere else.
If you,
I know you're a contract worker and you're brilliant, so you can name your price kind of thing. But sometimes people like sometimes people really need the healthcare benefits. Sometimes it really is the only game in town. Sometimes, you know, there are other benefits that they need. They don't want to move. So I think the tips I've got are for if you're staying at your job and you don't want to do this hardball like Squeaky is doing, I've got five other things to talk about to get a raise. But I think that's a good point, you know, overall, that if you go work somewhere else, you could make way, way, way more. But, yeah.
It just occurred to me how often I've done this.
Okay.
I'm like,
all right. Well, this is how Squeaky has so much money.
Yeah.
But we are going to go through the list of what Carl's written for. And so the first thing, he's got five things to do to get a raise. Take initiative, have a positive attitude, keep learning. You know, these are all things that he researched from Indeed.com, which are pretty, you know, standard. One thing he says, though, is set goals for your career, which I think is good, too, to help you be able to ask for a raise. Like, what are the things that you're doing now that show your worth, show you have more skill, you know, that you're getting the additional training and those kinds of things. I think having goals for your career is important in getting a raise.
A lot of the places I've been at that did actually offer and follow through on annual or quarterly raises had metrics, right?
Yeah.
Like one of the contracts I was at, I talked with the full-time employees, of course, but Woodman Life Insurance of America, right?
Oh, yeah.
You would set goals for each quarter and each year. And your boss would set some of them and you would set some of them. And the more of them you met, the better your raise would be. Now, it still capped you out at like 5 or 6% for a raise, which.
And your boss has to like you.
That's true.
That's the thing. If it's something that's completely boss dependent, asking for a raise, some companies have a way for you to get a raise that doesn't matter if your boss, or not that it matters, but it's like your boss is weighted, like your boss counts for, you know, 75% to half of it. But there's what your peers also say, what other people in management say, what other partners or peers that you work with outside of your company say. Setting expectations for yourself, setting goals, getting endorsements from people inside and outside the organization, being flexible. That's the thing I was talking about earlier, right? Like if you can get a job somewhere else, be flexible to going out there. And without being too much of a, you know, a brown nose, do be visible to bosses and show off and be proud of your work. And here's a key one that I thought was important, that is from Harvard Business Review, which is, you know, tell your boss that you want to talk about your salary sometime so that they're not surprised, so that they know that you are motivated for that raise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Surprising your boss is never going to be a good
not
strategy.
Good. No. Yeah. Right. Now, so that's, oh, go ahead.
No, and also, if your boss keeps ghosting you or keeps pushing you off, they're like, oh, we'll talk about this after you've been here 6 months. We'll talk about this after, you know, next quarter. We'll talk. If your boss does that to you like three times, you're done. You're never getting a raise. Just move to a different company.
Okay.
That so many places I've been at that's happened to my full-time peers. God, sorry. Okay. I have opinions about.
I think he's actually a pirate. For hire here, so he knows how to make the money.
The term I prefer is mercenary.
Right. Okay, sorry. Well, so that's the first part of being a good employee, right? And then the second part is you have to prepare to make the ask, right? So here's some things that you're going to need to think about. You need to decide of if this is the right time, you know, overall, like if your company is affected by tariffs, might be kind of a hard time to ask for a raise. If they are doing a bunch of layoffs of other people.
And that sucks so much. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, right? Because kind of need to batten down the hatches rather than look for a raise.
And that's right when all your bills are going up.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So keep in mind, also, it's generally a year between raises. So if you just got a raise 2 months ago, going in and asking for a raise, you know, is not that's not a good time.
You're going to have bad luck with that.
Yeah.
That said, the worst they can do is say no.
Yeah. And then when you go into the meeting, you have the research about benchmarking and qualification of your performance as possible. Like, you know, I saved the company this much money by moving this procedure in-house. I made this task more efficient, which saves us time, which always saves us money. You know, try to quantify it if possible.
Can I get political?
I'll probably cut it, but go ahead.
This is great advice for white Christian old men.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My white Christian old male friends who follow this advice, it works pretty well for them. They can pretty routinely get their 5% raises per year by hitting those metrics. But while I was at Woodman, I gained a new friend. She was trans, and she did these things. And I think she's going to do everything else in the list. And she did all the right things, and she could not get a raise. They just never had money in the budget, but all of her, by the empirical metric, underperforming peers who were straight white passing men did get those promotions. And
so that is more into anti-discrimination law. And so knowing your company's discrimination policies and knowing your state's anti-discrimination policies, you like how I did that there, and also having a good employment lawyer is another way to get that raise or that money that you have been denied. Your mileage might vary as to where the law will actually work for you or work against you, or who has resources to to hire an employment lawyer. But if that employment lawyer could get money by winning that case, it's worth looking into.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and so be as aware as possible about your company discrimination, but also their salary structure. So you don't ask for too much or too little. Kind of know their finances if you can. Prepare for a discussion of what you bring to the table and how you're going to improve the company. And then practice. Practice how you are going to be asking for a raise. Practice with a friend of what your boss is going to say and what you could say. So you have that kind of mental memory muscle when you're in it and you're not panicking and saying something else. And that is advice from Robert Half and The Cut.
So it's analogous, but not exactly the same. But I like interviewing for new contracts constantly, because it is kind of like applying for a job, but it's a job you know you're going to leave after 6 months or a year or something, right?
Yeah. Well, and so the third point from Carl here that he researched from The Cut is like, how are you supposed to act during the ask, right? So prepare a discussion of what you're bringing to the table. Practice how to ask for a raise. Use positive language.
Oh, yeah.
Don't filibuster. Get straight to the point. And remember that in most cases, it isn't their money. It's not really like asking a friend for a loan. Like, this is just business. So it's fine. You're asking them for a raise. You're not asking them to spot you, you know, $300 so you can make rent this month.
Yeah. And whatever you're being paid, most companies, you're making, you know, 2, 3, 10 times as much for them. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I come from the nonprofit sector, so that's not really analogous to me, but yeah. And the for-profit sector, you probably do.
Can I hit you with some weird math?
Sure.
I encourage everyone to do this math. Okay?
Okay.
And I'll spitball some numbers just so you can see where I'm coming from, right?
Okay.
Take the revenue of the company, right? Just like Google it, get the revenue, and divide that by the headcount, right?
Okay.
When you do that, you get some interesting numbers. You get the revenue per employee per year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Walmart, the revenue per employee per year, when I last looked this up, was like $120,000 a person.
Wow.
So think about that when you're asking for your, you know, raise from $15 to $16 an hour. They can afford it.
Yeah.
And then on the flip
side,
PayPal, last time I did the math for PayPal, was closer to $2 million per person per year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because they're making quite the amount of money. Yeah.
Well, because they're building a system that charges like, you know, a 0.5% fee on these transactions, but no human is actually doing labor for it. So they spend a whole bunch of money to build a system. They spend $10 million to build a system. But then that system every day does a million things that each make 0.5 cents. And you just, yeah. as long as you keep that system on, it keeps printing money for the company, sort of, kind of. It keeps making money. It's doing right, work right. For customers. But, like, the profit is decoupled from the labor. So, of course, they're going to make a lot of money. But even places where the labor is directly coupled to the money, the amount you're making versus the amount the company's making is so huge. So unless your company's really screwed, right? Like, if you're a small mom and pop plastic factory like we have, you know, in the bad parts of Omaha, however bad you can get.
In the hills of Nebraska.
But I bet those places are closer to $60,000 per person per year. And you're going to have a harder time getting a raise there than you are even at Walmart.
Okay. So, yeah, that's part, step two, we talked about research, right? That's a good thing to research. Now jumping ahead to step four, which is things to not do. Do not do this stuff.
I can fill this list.
Okay, but let me go first this time. Let me go first this time and then see if you got stuff to add. How about that?
Oh,
okay?
I mean, I can just add. I got you.
All right. So don't ask for a raise without justification and market research.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the worst they can do is say no, but, you know, they might hold it against you the next time you ask for a raise. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's best to try to succeed.
Make sure that the raise is not all about you or your financial difficulties.
Oh, that's yeah. Not... Your workplace doesn't care that you're going to have trouble making rent. They just don't.
Yeah.
They just don't. They want you to know how you can make them money.
Don't ask on a Monday morning or a Friday afternoon. Don't email or over the phone say, how about that raise?
So, I wonder how much of this is post-pandemic advice. Because I had a contract at EA and a contract at Bloomberg. And I don't know how I would have this meeting because Miami is the home office for EA, and I never went closer than, about 1,000 miles within my main workplace. Bloomberg was New York. It was also fully remote, so I don't know how I would have asked for a raise.
Oh.
I don't know.
That's a good point, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, generally, if you can, it's an in-person thing, so I guess during a Zoom call.
Okay.
Rather than email or phone.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, okay.
Whenever the face-to-face time is. Yeah. Don't ask for something outrageous that can't be done without that evidence. Like, if you have that higher job offer somewhere else, you know, make sure you time it right and don't compare it to your coworkers.
The one thing a boss loves is that you figured out what all your coworkers make.
Right?
There's no way you'll get fired just for knowing
or comparing
that.
I think this is more comparing your work to your coworkers. Like, I work 10 times as hard as the other person on my team.
And that's super subjective. What you need to do is get metrics that you and your boss knew you were trying to aim for and compare your metrics to what you could have done. You're like, hey, boss, I made 10% more sales this quarter than last quarter. You should give me a 10%.
There you go.
Yeah, stuff like that is great.
Yeah. And don't throw a tantrum or be unworkable. You know, to be like, I want to work with you here. Yeah. And so this, you were asking whether this was post-COVID or not. This is from 22 from Estrin Report.
Okay.
And we'll have this linked in the show notes so you can look at the article fully yourself, dear listener. But this is 22, so not too old. No,
and this is all good advice. This is just how you be professional and be prepared, right?
Yep.
If you're going to ask for a raise, you follow this list, you'll maximize your chances. It's still ultimately outside your control if you don't have leverage, but...
Yeah. The fifth step is to follow up. Say thanks for the salary review because it does take your boss time to honestly consider it. It does take the HR department time to do the market analysis. It does take the financial officer time to look through the budget to see if it's affordable or not. There's a lot of different steps. Okay. Like I said, I come from nonprofits. So always like, can we afford to keep this person for how much we're paying them for?
Yeah. Okay. So for the listener, I'm laughing and chuckling just because you said the word officer and then my ADHD brain went off and like, yes, I have this perfect thing for the segment you recorded 2 segments ago.
Oh, okay. All right. Good luck getting a raise in this economy with tariffs and financial instability. You can bet your employer is going to be like, gee, I don't know, because who knows what's going to happen politically next month or next year that we're going to be able to have this. People are trying to figure out how to have stability and be prepared for that one for your employers to use against you and be able to argue your way out of that.
Yeah, and maybe put out some feelers for other jobs. right?
Yeah.
If you get fired, you've already started the process. And if you need a raise, maybe you'll have an offer letter. I don't know.
Yeah. Yep.
But even
so
then,
always be applying for other jobs, I guess, in a volatile, unstable economy. Always have a backup plan ready to go, I guess.
So let me get this straight. My job here is comic relief, and what I've delivered is cynical financial advice. Okay.
I mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
I failed
miserably. I think some people would find it funny. Yeah.
Not in a good way. What the?
So if you want to tell us what you think about our list on how to get raises and whether you think it's a good idea or a bad idea, or if you have a surefire way like Squeaky does to get a raise, we want to hear about it. Email us at athoughtforyourpenniespod@gmail.com or give us a call at 970-425-3060 and share about 30 seconds and we will share it on air so we can all learn how to save money together.
Yeah, but seriously, the list is really good. It's just a list for how to be responsible. Do that. Ugh.
Hey there, Penny Thinkers. I'm excited to announce that A Thought for Your Pennies is part of the Creator Accountability Network. CAN is a nonprofit dedicated to reducing harassment and abuse through ethical education and a system of restorative accountability. I joined, and so did Squeaky, because we care about the safety and well-being of our community members. If you feel that our behavior or content has harmed someone, please report it to CAN, either via the reporting form on their website, creatoraccountabilitynetwork.org, or via their hotline at 617-249-4255. They'll help us make it right and avoid repeating that mistake in the future. CAN also needs volunteers from our communities to help with their work, so if you have skills that you think would be helpful, or time and a desire to help, please visit their website to find out how you can volunteer. Most importantly, get the word out to other creators who you think would be interested in getting credentialed. Help us build safer communities together. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to A Thought for Your Pennies, the show where we learn how to save money together. I'm Shauna, and this is Squeaky. All right.
And I'm Squeaky, and I'm ready to discuss the one business that gets more legitimate if they did all their transactions in gift cards.
That's right, because how would you pay interest in gift cards? Well, that's we're going to be talking about payday advance scams. This one's close to my heart because this is how my mom survived when I was growing up. We had our water shut off and our lights turned off and all this stuff. And she would make bill payments through payday advance, just single mom, basically. I mean, my dad was supportive and around, but clearly just wasn't enough money to raise two kids on her own. So, yeah, going to the payday lenders was a feature in my life growing up. And we're going to talk about why they are so scammy. So first, we should define what a payday loan is, right?
Sure.
I think it's a scam. Yeah.
And that's good because not all loans are scams. And sometimes it's responsible to deficit spend, but not like this.
Right. So it's the goal of a payday loan is to provide money on a short term with high interest rates. Okay. So it's living in that gray area of it's a business, but you are making a living off of desperate people. So, Yeah.
And it's wherever payday loan places pop up, they always do the worst thing that's legal. Here in Omaha, right, we have this suburb of Omaha called Council Bluffs that's just across the river and on the other side in Iowa, right? And Nebraska had a law that maxed out or that put a cap on the interest rates. Iowa didn't because Des Moines, the biggest city there, just banned them. They just, hey, you can't have these. So most of Iowa didn't have a problem with it. But here in Omaha, we have this state law that just prevents it. And if you accidentally hop across the river, you could get an interest rate that's two or three times higher.
Wow.
Yeah.
Iowa, where all Nebraskans go to sin. Especially Council Bluff with all the casinos and stuff like that. Carter Lake, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So payday advance loans, according to Investopedia, are short-term, high-interest loans for individuals that are based on how much the borrower earns. They have to provide a pay stub when applying for such a loan. Okay? Yep. Now, like you're saying, there's a cap on the interest rate in Omaha. Des Moines has banned them. Payday loans are actually illegal in 21 states, according to Debt Hammer.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. And it's the lending is regulated in many others. The National Council of State Legislators offers a comprehensive list. And Debt Hammer gives examples of state regulations, like 12 states capped it at an interest rate of 36%. And six states in Washington, D.C. have even tighter interest rate caps.
Yeah. And just think about how bad a thing has to be for Nebraska to legislate it.
For Nebraska to be like, we don't want this.
It either has to be a completely harmless drug or it needs to be just truly heinous.
Okay. Yeah. That is what payday advance loans are and why they're so nefarious.
Were you going to skip the debt cycle aspect of it or are you going to get to that later? I don't want to bogart you on that.
Well, I was going to talk about how much the costs are set by state laws and then the way they can get scammy. So, yeah, why don't you talk about the debt cycle?
So I have been in the unfortunate place of needing to use these guys a couple times. I haven't always been making software, or sometimes when there isn't a contract, I'll go without work for 6 months, a year. And every time I've gotten a loan from these places, luckily I've been able to pay it off like, you know, 2 weeks from now. So I'll have gotten like, you know, $400 and I'll pay them back $500. Right. Which is a 20% interest rate for a 1 week loan, which is nuts. But when you need it, it's better than having things shut off. Right.
Right. Yeah.
But for so many people, what they'll do is they'll look at how much you make on your pay stub and they'll give you some percentage of that. But then the fee will be so big that you will have trouble paying all of it off. So if you have to carry over a bunch of it to your next paycheck and then take out another loan to keep going, you will start this. Yeah, you'll start this cycle.
Right. That's another reason why they are no good.
Yep.
And Experian offers insight into how much these loans cost. Payday loan costs are set by state laws with fees ranging from $10 to $30 for every $100 borrowed. And a 2 week payday loan can cost $15 per $100 borrowed, and due to their short repayment terms, however, payday loan APRs are usually 400% or more, according to the Consumer Federation of America.
Yeah, if that loan that I had that was about 20% over a week or 2 weeks, let's say it was 2 weeks to make it look better. Actually, let's say it's 1 month to make it look better, right? If it's 20% interest for a month, if you compound that out 12 times, how much interest is that actually over a year? That's going to be some thousands percent of interest per year.
Right.
It's going to be nuts.
Yep. Yeah. And the Rio Grande Credit Union points out that not every scam involves blatant dishonesty. Some are just misleading and aggressive initiatives that trap people because they don't have a choice or they don't really know what they're getting into.
Yeah. Yeah. My experience with the payday lenders was they were very honest. They explained the terms. You just didn't have a choice.
Right. Now, actual scams that involve payday loans are the gamut that we have talked about here on Scam Central, which is, you know, the theft of personal and financial information, payday loans taken out in somebody else's name, fraud, you know, predatory loan rates and payback policies, calls, emails, or text offers of debt protection that can't be delivered, loans based on prepaid processing fee and application fee or pay for insurance on the loan in advance. That's a new one to get around those regulations. Phantom payday loan, in which a scammer contacts somebody claiming that they owe them money on a payday loan that they actually never took out. Upfront payment scams, in which a fake lender promises a loan after upfront payment for fees or collateral referred to as processing or insurance fees.
I'm trying just to not yell. Oh, my God. Sorry. Yeah.
Payday. Okay. Don't burst the vein in your head. I can see it bumping. But payday rollover scams that offer rollover extension of an existing payday loan. Those extensions come with extra fees and interest that add up. And asset recovery scams. That's a fraudulent group or individual that contact a consumer after they've been scammed, offering to recover their lost money after they've already been scammed. So because scammers trade list of their victims from less costly scams. And so once they hit them, they sell their list to then be a scammer and say, hey, I know you got scammed. I could get your money back for two easy payments of $39.99.
So after you've been scammed, they're like, this guy's an easy mark. Let me sell him to the guy who will pretend to be a lawyer or some sort of bounty hunter or something to come after me. And he just won't. And he'll take, oh my, that is some scamception. What?
The world of scams, right? Yeah. Scams just birthing more scams scams.
So that's particularly heinous, right?
Yes.
Like, let's lie to someone who's already been victimized because we know we can do it. And some of that's just scams. Like, oh, let me call you and pretend you've got a payday loan out in your name. Right? There's just straight scams and illegal. But stuff like loan insurance, that's a real thing. Right? Mm. Do you have a mortgage? Or have you ever gotten a mortgage, Shauna?
Yeah, you have to have it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you take out a loan for some percentage of the house that you're buying, right? And you didn't have like a big enough down payment, banks will mandate that you buy insurance that if you like default, you know, this insurance will pay the bank back for your loan.
Right. So, yeah. Like, and that's something, that's one thing I do to lower my overall mortgage payment is that I will pay if I don't have enough to get that PMI insurance taken off.
Yeah.
Right. I will like put extra money towards getting to that amount so that I could be like, you don't need that insurance anymore on me because I've gotten enough paid in there. Like that's one way.
Yep.
It's like a double whammy, right? Because I've both put down more money on the mortgage and now it's enough that that PMI, that mortgage insurance can be taken off. So how do you protect yourself? Right?
I every suggestion I have, you would have to come.
Involves a hammer.
Sure, some sort of application force. Right. Yeah.
Well, according to the Mutual Security Credit Union, research lenders, avoid upfront fees, be wary of unsolicited offers, understand the terms, and check for a physical address.
Yeah, that all seems like good basic stuff.
If you need help, yeah.
But if, I mean, beg, borrow, steal. I mean, those are, I hate to suggest crime, but like...
Well, and there's also, you know, voting for people who are aggressive in consumer protections, right?
Oh, like, but we can't have that. That's communism.
No. I mean, there's people out there, like in my state, Phil Weiser, he's our current attorney general, and he's built his whole career off of being very aggressive for consumers.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
no.
great. Yeah.
Jokes aside, yeah, we definitely should get politicians that will ban this predatory, evil nonsense.
Right, because that saves us money. Every day it saves us money when we have people doing that. Yeah. Yep. So when you are researching candidates to vote for, which ones? Doesn't matter party. Communist Party, Moon Party, Libertarian, Democrat. Like, which ones are the ones doing aggressive consumer protection? That saves you money.
I just, the amount of times, even since this last presidential nomination, that I've heard someone call some idea where we're pooling our resources or the government's trying to do something good. The amount of times I've heard it called communist and dismissed.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
It's mind-boggling.
It's ridiculous.
Like me giving birth to my kids and then feeding them. Oh, that's communism.
Yeah,
the kids should work to put...
They should pick themselves up by the bootstraps.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, I think a lot of times people think about finances and just taxes. I don't want to pay more taxes.
Yeah, but if you can spend $1 in tax and save $100,
exactly. If they're like, oh, this 1% sales tax for any time I buy groceries in town, I don't want to pay another 1% sales tax. And you look at your budget for how much your groceries are, you know, for it depends on who you are, right? How much groceries are a percentage of your budget. But more likely, it is not going to be as expensive as the consumer protections that would save you from getting scammed, from paying high airline fees, from paying all this stuff that predatory businesses who are always out to get you. Like, I think like that's the good thing to be looking at.
There was a period of time in American history where they used to add water and chalk to milk.
Nasty.
Right? Consumer protections mean that when we buy milk, we get milk.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. Can you really put a price on not contracting E. coli in your food?
I mean, the chalk would prevent that.
Yeah, strengthen up your stomach. Well, anyway, big shout out to Carl for all the research you did in getting this episode together. And that is our Payday Advanced Scams. But if you have a story you want to share about this or better advice, want to challenge us, we would love to hear from you. Email us at athoughtforyourpenniespod@gmail.com or give us a call at 970-425-3060. And we will share, if it's like 30 seconds or less, we'll share your financial tip on air so that we can all learn how to save money together.
You're just cutting it off here so I don't shout at the audience.
I mean, I see the rage building. It's time to go. Thank you.